Thanks for tuning into Mysteries of the Mind, a podcast revealing the way our unconscious minds shape our lives. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Bader.
You hear a lot today about something called the imposter syndrome, in which someone feels like a fraud, a poseur, in short, an imposter of some kind. But what is it exactly, and what causes it? Well, here it is. Simply put, the imposter syndrome is a collection of beliefs, usually irrational and often unconscious, that tell those afflicted with them that they're not supposed to be strong or confident or successful or ambitious, lest they suffer shame, guilt, or some other type of painful psychological consequence. For example, if I believe that I'm not supposed to be smart or talented, and therefore that I don't deserve my position or that I don't deserve the esteem in which I'm held, I may as a result be more disposed to somehow shoot myself in the foot before at least someone else does. People with the imposter syndrome invariably undermine themselves. Now, there are few people I know and none that I've treated in psychotherapy who haven't at times felt like imposters or wrestled with feelings of fraudulence. And I mean the suffering that accompanies such feelings are certainly familiar to many in our culture. A cursory scan of self-help books on Amazon revealed well over 200 books directly or indirectly discussing some version of the imposter syndrome or of the psychology of feelings of fraudulence. I saw everything from titles like How to Stop Self-Sabotaging and Start Living, to the more recent book, Lean In, by Sheryl Sandberg. So I've had occasion to treat people afflicted with this syndrome for a long time. It shows up especially in people who have reached or been promoted to some kind of leadership role or status, or who have achieved great wealth or status. But I want to be clear now. People who have achieved success in any area of life, like in their love life or sex lives, or who have achieved some type of popularity, can and do suffer from feelings of fraudulence, from the imposter syndrome, every bit as strongly as those who have achieved the external trappings of power, status, and prestige. Recently, I had occasion to work closely with people who had risen to prominence and power in a social change organization, for example, a labor union. And I found that the feelings of fraudulence that these leaders experienced were grounded in beliefs, often secret or unconscious, that they hadn't earned what they'd achieved and that they didn't belong in the position they held. They felt that it was as if they'd been admitted to a club by mistake, a mistake that would soon be revealed and exposed, and that would then result in some humiliating rejection or attack or punishment, all of which would, of course, confirm that original feeling of illegitimacy. People suffering from the imposter syndrome tend to be worried that others are envious of their success and secretly wish for them to fail, and that these imaginary others would relish discovering some flaw that would lead the imposter to a downfall. In this way, the imposter tends to always worry that he or she is one mistake away from disaster. They're constantly worried about being found out. Yes, being found out, exposed. These are the dangers haunting the person feeling like an imposter. So that's the imposter syndrome. But what are its roots? What causes this condition, this actually painful condition? Well, first off, imposters are made, not born. It begins in childhood. Somehow, these children grow up in families in which they come to believe that confidence, self-assertion, pride, and success somehow threatens their ties to caretakers. Caretakers upon whom, of course, they depend for safety and survival. It might be that a parent puts this directly into words, getting angry or hurt when the child is strong or independent. This is more frequent than one might think. Some parents need their children to be dependent and to need them. In other words, they experience the child's development as threatening. Other times, the parent might be miserable for reasons unrelated to the child. But what we know is that children take responsibility for more than they should. And they can and often do conclude falsely, it turns out, that the child's own independence or exuberance or the child's own self-assertion is harmful and should be repressed. So there are lots of ways that someone can grow up feeling guilty or illegitimate about success. This is the soil in which the imposter syndrome may later grow. See, if you feel guilty about success to begin with, and then achieve success, the result is a sense of fraudulence, a sense that your success is undeserved. As the child becomes an adult, any positive trait or normal developmental aim, love, power, authority, intelligence, status, recognition, or even independence can come to feel undeserved and illegitimate. If, that is, that adult's childhood taught him or her that success potentially threatens important relationships. But think about it. I mean, these are all normal things to want. They're normal ambitions. So if such a person with such conflicts manages to, in fact, progressively succeed more and more in his or her life, it stirs up ancient conflicts. Ambition, healthy ambition itself becomes psychologically risky. These folks have learned that they're not supposed to feel such things. They come to feel like imposters. As Sheryl Sandberg says in her book, Lean In, the imposter syndrome can be a special problem for women. Not only are women held back by real-world glass ceilings, but they can also hold themselves back because of beliefs that confidence and a sense of authority are traits that belong to men, and that women will be punished as unfeminine if they presume to express it. And they often are accused of this, but such external bias often mirrors the woman's own private belief and worry. Lots of women have spoken out about this, of course, including Sonia Sotomayor, Kate Winslet, Maya Angelou, Oprah Winfrey, and Meryl Streep, to name a few. But having said that, feelings of fraudulence are not limited to women. For example, a survey of Harvard Business School students found that 75% of both sexes believed the school had made a mistake in admitting them. Men feel this a lot and may just not be able to admit it with the same freedom as women. Feeling like a fraud, you know, is the source of a great deal of suffering. It makes someone actually motivated to undermine him or herself as well. The logic is, if I don't belong in the club, then maybe I should just stop pretending I do and accept disappointment and failure as my due. Here are some of the more common ways that people get in their own way or snatch defeat from the jaws of victory as expressions of their sense of being an imposter. So I found that people in leadership roles may become paralyzed by perfectionism and micromanaging. One patient of mine described it this way. He said, look, suppose you're poor and sneak into that exclusive country club you're always talking about, pretending to be a member. You'd feel you had to be careful and observe meticulous etiquette and manners and act in just the right way. Your behavior would have to be perfect, in other words, lest you be exposed and kicked out as being illegitimate, an imposter, or being a fraud. On the other hand, if you were born wealthy and grew up in such clubs, you could relax and take liberties because you took for granted you belonged. The patient's point was that his perfectionism was his way of ensuring that he wouldn't be found out, that he wouldn't be exposed as an imposter. If you're constantly vulnerable to being judged and found out, you really have to be perfect. A second manifestation of the imposter syndrome is found in people who are successful but are workaholics and are unable to take care of themselves properly. To them, too much of this self-care business feels self-indulgent and risky. Who are you to think that you can be successful and be healthy and rested and have balance at the same time? These public figures then often burn out. The only way that they can prove to the judgmental world in their heads that they aren't fakers or slackers is to behave like workaholic martyrs, often creating around them cultures of sacrifice that can be quite dysfunctional. A particularly insidious manifestation of the imposter syndrome that I've seen a lot in leaders of progressive political organizations is what I call a quote, self-defeating commitment to being an underdog. Too often, I think, such leaders over-identify with the victims for whom they're advocating. In these cases, it's as if the leaders want to deny that they're better off than the folks they represent, which, if truth be known, they often are. This usually comes from the guilt that such activists feel about their own privilege. The result is that they can't accept their privilege and have to constantly instead pretend that they're worse off than they actually are. Overcoming the imposter syndrome isn't easy, but it can be done. It first has to be identified, of course. The person has to come to face his or her irrational and destructive belief that success, that having the good things in life, has been regarded as dangerous and undeserved. The person has to develop a new relationship to success, learning to enjoy it and learning that it's safe to do so.
Thanks for listening to Mysteries of the Mind podcast. To learn more about how your unconscious mind really works, please tune in next time. And be sure to visit Dr. Bader's website at michaelbader.com.